Right now, across the state, countless middle-class families are doing their taxes and wondering where the tax cuts they were promised by President Trump and his enablers went.
The middle class was devastated, ravaged, hollowed out in the last administration. We are rebuilding the middle class.
Exactly. No one in the middle class will pay the millionaire's tax, period.
This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon, and I'm joined here in the studios of WBGO in Newark by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Good evening.
Good evening, Nancy, and let me say happy 40th anniversary to WBGO.
That's right. We are here in downtown Newark for the 40th anniversary, and so happy birthday to Doug Doyle, Amy Nile, Alexandra Hill, and the crew here. They are fantastic hosts, and now we're doing the show monthly, so we're excited about that. And we're pleased to give New Jersey residents the opportunity to ask you their questions. Monday, of course, is tax day, and it's the first filing season since the new Republican tax overhaul went into effect. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Are your taxes going up as a result of the new law? How has the $10,000 cap on state and local tax deductions been treating you? Give us a call at 844-677-9283. And WBGO News Director Doug Doyle is here and will be taking your questions via social media. So tweet your questions for Governor Murphy using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. So let's get right into it with taxes. So far, the tax law seems to be having a mixed impact on New Jersey taxpayers. Of course, one of the hard hits is for folks whose property taxes are over $10,000 a year, and that's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. They can't deduct any more past $10,000. That's what people refer to when they talk about the SALT deduction and the cap on the SALT deduction. We have a lot of high earners in the state, a lot of high property taxes. So I think it's clear you've spoken out many times against the cap, and you'd like to see Washington change that. You know, one of the things, though, is, you know, property taxes are high. So that would be something you do have control over. What are you looking at it in that regard?
So, Nancy, again, it's good to be back. I'm wearing my 40th anniversary happy birthday pin. I want the viewers or listeners to hear. We take all of the above very, very seriously. Let me start with the federal plan. The $10,000 state and local tax deduction limit hurts New Jersey, period. And it hurts states like us. It hurts states with relatively high property taxes, the good value for money states. So you pay a lot to be in a state like ours, but you get back number two public school system in America, number one in physics, number two in chemistry. We better darn well get good transit. I want to talk about that tonight. The densest state in the nation, the most diverse state. You get a rich basket of stuff back. That's the balance that we're trying to get at, and that limitation hurts that. And so we're battling it. We're battling it in Congress. We're battling it in court. We're battling with creative solutions, and we'll continue to do so. But the other piece of the Trump tax law from 2017, which was supposed to be taking everybody to the promised land, has been a big letdown across the board. I can't tell you how many folks over the past year have said they were looking for a little bit of something extra in their take-home pay. They didn't see it. It's now tax season. They're doing their taxes, and they're doing the math, and the refunds are either down or they're having to pay more. And so it's turning out just as folks had predicted, who did the real math, which is about, I think, 83% of the benefit when all is said and done is going to go to the top 1% in our country. What we could control, other than I want to continue to battle back against that and work with Congress and our delegation to undo all of the above, is we inherited a state with an awful property tax crisis. Last year, I'm proud to say, was the lowest increase on record, but it was an increase, and that's not enough. So we are, by putting a record amount more into education funding, when your average property tax bill is 53%, is one way to get a property tax relief. We presented a budget with $1.1 billion of savings, which has about $400 million of a component locally. That's potential property tax relief. The homestead rebate, $283 million in our budget. Shared services, ours, growing the economy. We can't break the back of a decades-building property tax crisis overnight or with one step, but we're taking many steps and will continue to.
Okay, so I believe we've got questions coming in on social media that are about taxes. Doug Doyle, have you got a question on taxes for us?
Good evening, Governor.
And hey, Doug.
Hi. Gloria from Fairlawn wants to know, what happened to the workaround you were going to install to offset the loss of deductibility of property tax for over $10,000?
Yeah, Gloria, it's still there. It's up to local communities to pursue it, but we're actually going at that a number of different ways. First of all, let me back up. If folks don't know it as Gloria does, here's the deal. The IRS has blessed in 33 other states, many of them, by the way, red states, which matters only because we got a red administration in Washington, basically charitable deductions in more cases than not for funding private education in lieu of the tax deduction you'd normally get by through your property taxes. They've blessed it in 33 other states. You said, hey, wait a minute. If you've blessed it in 33 other states, let's set up a parallel structure which communities can take part in, which basically mimics those blessed realities in other states. I'm happy to say Congressman Josh Gottheimer is pursuing it in Congress at the same time to try to make this at a federal level, and we are challenging the constitutionality of it legally, that this is, in fact, double taxation. So those are three steps, Gloria, that we've taken. One is that workaround exists, and we're challenging the IRS. Number two, we're supporting our congressional efforts to challenge it through Congress and the law, again, challenging IRS. And thirdly, we are pursuing through the Attorney General a vigorous attack on this double taxation and unconstitutionality of it.
I have to say I'm a little confused about, I know that the IRS sort of shot it down and that you're challenging it. So where does that leave taxpayers? I mean, should they be going to their town hall and doing the workaround or paying their property taxes like they normally do and wait for this to get resolved?
Listen, there's no evidence based particularly on precedent in other states that if they partake of the parallel structure that they're going to be penalized for that. But I think folks at the same time have to go into this with their eyes open, that we're battling like heck on their behalf and we will not relent on this, but it is not a certainty.
Okay, and I believe we do have another tax question on social. Doug, what else do you have there?
This comes from Mary Ellen from Middletown, a town you know very well, Governor.
I do.
What can you do for property taxes now that we can only deduct $20,000? I live in the same home as your private residence, and you know far too well taxes for a modest home in Middletown now are above that threshold. If marijuana is legalized, how can that directly offset the high cost of living in New Jersey?
So, Mary Ellen, I will see you in the hood as a fellow Middletown guy. So a number of things. First of all, we raised the cap in last year's budget. We've kept it in this year's budget for folks to be able to deduct state taxes, property taxes, up to $15,000. That's still in our budget. It's an idea, frankly, that came from across the aisle, and we welcome that. Secondly, we are, again, we are pulling the levers that I've mentioned already. When we put more money into school funding, that's an indirect way for this. If the state's picking up more of the tab, that means that's less of the tab the local community has to pick up. We announced those $1.1 billion of savings, which are real. $800 million of that are healthcare savings. $400 million in addition to that $800 are available locally. That's another potential. Shared services, we are all over that, and we have been for going on a year with two former mayors, czars, one Republican, one Democrat. Growing the economy, all sorts of other steps. Homestead rebate, I mentioned. You asked me about marijuana. We should talk about that at some point tonight. That is in our budget at a modest amount because we don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. But clearly, it has the potential, the recreational side, of being a big money spinner. And that is, yes, that's another source of potential property tax relief.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your questions using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And so sticking with this for a moment, You got some good news with the poll recently that showed that 70% of New Jerseyans support your plan for a millionaire's tax.
Yeah, I knew it was popular and supported. I think it was 72%, which was higher than I would have guessed.
So how much does that, I know you have said that you want to bring that back to the legislature in the budget negotiations that are beginning and will run through June. How much is that a factor in terms of creating property tax relief, or is that just something that's going to pay for additional services?
Well, it pays for the stuff that makes this state go. And it's tax equity, in my opinion. It's tax fairness. I'm not a class warrior. I want everybody to be here and to feel good about being here. But we have four pillars in our budget. Number one, we prove we can save money. I mentioned $1.1 billion annually. Two, restore fiscal stability. So let's get rid of the one-off revenues to the best of our ability, cut down on diversions, have a real surplus in our budget. Thirdly, let's continue the all-in investment in our middle class. That's schools, K through 12, expanding pre-K, access to higher ed, including free community college for what will be 18,000 students, healthcare relief, our battle to break the back of the opioid scourge, et cetera. So an all-in investment in the middle class funded by, among other things, tax fairness, tax equity. A big chunk of that is, in fact, the millionaire's tax. So I say to myself, listen, if we are the quintessential middle-class state, and if the last administration basically ignored it, if not ravaged the middle class, and we have since last year been all in on investing in the middle class, I can't justify making the middle class continue to take it on the chin and bear the freight for that investment. So we're asking the wealthiest among us to pay a little bit more, their fair share. That'll go right into K through 12 education funding, NJ transit, pre-K, higher ed, et cetera.
Okay, let's take a call from Bruno in Highland Park. Bruno, you're on the air with the governor. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Governor Murphy. Thank you for a really great 2 years.
And Bruno.
Hi. I'm a member of the public banking group here in New Jersey, Banking on New Jersey, and just was wondering the status of the public bank. Are we going to get one here in New Jersey? And is there anything we can do at a local level to help move it forward?
Yeah, Bruno, the answer is I still want to do this one in a big way. It's on what is now an increasingly shorter list of things we have not been able to crack the back of, and I still want to do it in a big way. And when you say, is there anything we could do, Bruno, I'm going to make sure we know how to track you down, because any good ideas on how we can unbreak the logjam, I would take. And if folks listening don't know what it is, it's a pretty cool idea, and it's a simple one. North Dakota is the only state that's ever done it. It basically said, listen, instead of taking our tax revenues until we have to pay the bills in our state, or frankly, you could do it at community or county level, let's put it into a bank that the people own, and then let's lend that into our state and not give it to a Wall Street bank that then lends it around the world. So it would be in New Jersey, owned by the citizens, and its loan portfolio would be entirely in the state. The three pillars that we've talked about, student loans, small business loans, particularly to minority and women-owned, and small-scale infrastructure. I still love the idea. This is turning out to be harder to pull off than we thought, but we have not given up, Bruno, I promise you.
What's the biggest obstacle?
Basically statute regulations that exist that are very difficult for us to find our way through. I'm not giving up on it. We had at one point talked about a pilot. The advocates for a public bank didn't like that idea. I don't blame them. I frankly had mixed emotions about it as well. I still love the idea. It's a clean shot. And by the way, importantly, Nancy and Bruno, that we designed it to work with community banks, not at their expense. So the money is now going to go to Wall Street banks or buy commercial paper. That's the money we would keep back in New Jersey. And we could do this with community banks.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. So let's talk about the Rutgers faculty who are on the verge of striking. And that would be the first strike in Rutgers' 253-year history. And it would also be the first strike of tenure-track faculty in the Big Ten. So I hear from professors that one of the big sticking points is gender equity among for women faculty. They want hiring of more teachers, the use of less adjunct folks who get paid by the class. And that seems like something you would support. So how is it that we're at the brink of a strike and that, you know, what are you doing and are you going to step in and fix this problem?
Listen, first of all, I've spoken to these members. It must be said that as I walked in here tonight, there was a very cool jazz band from Rutgers. I want to give Rutgers another
shout
out.
Fantastic school. No one's saying
no
it
No one's
isn't.
Doubting that, right?
Yeah.
With great instruction, by the way. We've spoken to members of the faculty. As a conceptual matter, we stand for everything you just said. You know, having a ratio that works for students, having gender parity, having a big adjunct faculty members historically have had a lot of legitimate concerns, and I understand and support all of that. This is not something that I'd normally get into the middle of. I've spoken to them. I frankly don't recall that I've had any conversations on the administration side. I have on the faculty side. I'm an optimist. I read some sense today that there was some optimism that they could find a way to get to common ground and get this solved, and I hope they can.
And, I mean, is this something that you have influence in? Can you pick up the phone and talk to people on the Board of Governors? You are the governor.
Yeah, I am the governor. And I have, as I said, my conversations to date have been with members of the faculty, including some of the union leaders. And again, the points that you've laid out, Nancy, are the ones that they've laid out. And I can't say as a conceptual matter, I'm not at the table negotiating it, but as a conceptual matter, it's hard for me to disagree.
Okay, well, let's hope that they work it out. And so now, another big story that's been in the news is the tax breaks to corporations, the tax incentive program that's run by the Economic Development Authority. There was a protest yesterday with activists calling on the board of the state's Economic Development Authority to resign over its tax incentive program. You don't see that every day, asking an entire board over one of New Jersey's many authorities to resign. Here's South Jersey activist Sue Altman.
This is the fox guarding the hen house, and it must stop today.
So you've, just to get our listeners on board here, you've been quite critical of this program. You were critical during your campaign, it goes way back, about these Christie-era tax breaks that just grew and grew during his tenure for 8 years. You had the audit done of the EDA that found that they weren't really checking whether companies were hiring people and expanding the workforce in New Jersey. And now you've got the task force that's looking at maybe possible problems, possibly even fraud, and clawing back some of that money for the state. So here you have 56 organizations signing a letter calling for the board to resign. This board, if I'm correct, are mostly Chris Christie appointees. So what do you think of the idea?
So, there's a lot in that question. And I'm a big Sue Altman fan. So if Sue's listening, I want to give her a shout out. And so you rightfully said, Nancy, way back when it was cold, dark, and lonely, I was very critical of this. But there's really two criticisms. And I'm less obsessed with person X or Y resigning from the board than I am on turning the page and getting to a new and better place, which we are desperately trying to do. The criticisms that I had early on was that it was the only element of our economic development strategy was to give out tax incentives. It was incredibly old school. It was incredibly backward looking. It did not discriminate among types of industries. All of the underinvesting that the Christie administration made in schools and transportation and healthcare and jobs, that's the basis upon which companies make decisions. Do you have to have a competitive tax incentive program? Absolutely. But it's one tool in the toolbox. It's not the entire toolbox. So that's one set of criticisms. The second set of criticisms is that we put an audit in place, as you rightfully point out, and our comptroller came out with the results of that audit, I think, in December. And it led to our second area of concern, and it met our worst fears, and that is there was no control. And while we think most everybody who participated in this were good actors, there's a lot of jobs that have gone missing for the money we've paid. So we've set up an independent task force, which is independent, whose work is ongoing to get to the bottom of that. Separately, we've put forward a new family of proposed incentives, and maybe when we come back, I can get into that in some more detail.
Okay, but yes or no, should the board resign?
We shouldn't. That's not the right. Whether they resign or not is as important as let's turn the page and get to a better place.
Okay. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy. I'm Nancy Solomon. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in Newark at the studios of WBGO with Governor Phil Murphy, and we're taking your calls. And another ongoing huge story for the state is whether or not we're going to legalize marijuana. And I believe we have Diego in Carteret. Hi, Diego. You're on the air with the governor.
Hi, Governor Murphy.
Hey, Diego.
We know that New Jersey is a state that's waged over tax. Why is it that you're imposing yet more taxes in the form of your rain tax bill, if it does so pass?
Did I get the wrong? I thought we were going to talk about marijuana. Go ahead and answer that, Diego.
You're falling, with all due respect, and I'd love the chance to talk to you about this face to face. You're falling victim to somebody's political soundbite. This is not a rain tax. This is a legitimate issue in communities in our state and around the country, where you get cross wires between fresh water and wastewater. So this gives communities on a voluntary basis the ability to pursue a recourse to separate those, to make sure those waters are separated. So don't fall into the political soundbite theater of a rain tax. That's not what this is. This is to keep you and your family safe.
Okay, thanks for the call, Diego. And now,
by the way, I hope Diego at some point has a question on marijuana as well.
After the long-awaited vote was canceled because there weren't enough votes for it to pass, so now you've given a May deadline to legalize adult use recreational marijuana. So, and I believe we do have a marijuana question that came in via social. Doug Doyle, what have you got for us?
Yeah, we have several. Let's go with from Twitter. John B. asks, Governor Murphy, how likely is it that legal cannabis will pass by May? And what is the plan if you don't get the votes from the Senate?
John B., forgive me for dating myself. I'm thinking immediately of Sloop John B. by the Beach Boys. Very good question. I would only take a little exception with Nancy's statement of a deadline. This is what we're up against. First of all, we came very close. And this was a historic effort. And if we could get it done, no other state in America will do what we're trying to do. So 10 states have legalized adult use recreational marijuana and the District of Columbia. 9 of the states and D.C. have done it by referendum because it's very popular with folks. It's an easy vote if you're a legislator or a governor to shy away from. Let's hand it to the people and let them decide. And that's what's been done everywhere except Vermont, of all places. Mm-hmm. We want to do it. We think it's a more courageous way. It's a harder way, but it's a better way to try to do it legislatively.
Why is that?
Because you can actually, this bill is absolutely written, hundreds of pages. It's explicit. in all elements of it. I get to this, as you've heard me say before, through the social justice lens. And this bill has to meet that test, or these related bills, and they do. Historic expungement provisions, historic ability for a person in the system or on parole to request vacating of their sentence, historic goals to be set aside for minority or women or disabled veterans to participate, small players, so that this isn't all just glommed onto by the big corporates. So, John, we have a leadership meeting tomorrow with the Senate President, the Speaker of the Assembly, to talk this, among other things, through. It's not so much a deadline, but here's the other reality I've got. We finally, the Christie administration gummed up the medical marijuana regime, which really impaired a lot of quality of life in our state for folks who have nowhere else to turn. And when we came into office, I think there were 15,000 people participating in that. We've opened that up dramatically. It's now, I think, mid-40,000s. But the demand to open up further is almost overwhelming. It is a better way to do that, to not just on the recreational side, but on the medical side, to do that legislatively. It's more comprehensive. It's a better thing to do for the patients. But if we can't get that done, I have no choice but to, with the Commissioner of Health, to open up the medical marijuana regime dramatically. And that's the reason why the timing really matters here. I'm cautiously optimistic, John. We came very close. We came within a vote or two. We had great working relationships with the leadership of the legislature. I hope we can print this sooner than later.
Now, I can understand why you think it's the right thing to do to open up medical marijuana further and to say that you're going to do that if recreation can't get passed soon. There are political analysts who are saying, well, why are you giving the legislature that out? How is Senate President Steve Sweeney going to whip those votes if you've basically telescoped, hey, don't pass recreation and we'll just give you medical?
I have to tell the truth. I mean, we are literally holding.
No, you're governor.
Wait a minute. The health commissioner and I are literally holding back. And again, to John's question and to your good follow-up, if it's a reasonable amount of time, and I think next month is a reasonable amount of time, we could continue to hold back on that. We can't hold back on that. And there's no magic to a particular day of the week, but we can't. There's too much at stake here. We've opened up the medical marijuana regime dramatically already. We must continue to open it up. And there's so many afflictions that we've added that we're changing people's lives. We've destigmatized the participation on the part of the physicians. We've really got that into the right place, but we need to get it, the access of it to that system, to many more people.
And are you looking at tweaking the bill so that you can get a couple more votes you need?
Without getting into the details, because as I said, we're meeting again tomorrow. Our teams have been meeting over the past couple of weeks since we came close. But I've used that word. I think that verb is the right verb.
Tweak.
Tweak.
no what, pun intended.
Exactly. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I can. I won't get into what I think they might be because I'm not sure I know all of the pieces. But I think it's more of a tweak than a wholesale reconsideration.
Okay, let's take another call. We have Linda in Kearney. Linda, you're on the air with the governor.
Hi, Governor. How are you?
I'm well, Linda. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I have a question for you. The residents of Kearney are getting sick from hydrogen sulfide gases
yep.
that are emanating from the Keegan landfill. The stench is so bad that people can't even open the windows of their homes. Why will you not close the Keegan landfill?
Yeah, so the it's a very good question, Linda, and we are pursuing that actively through the Department of Environmental Protection. You know, all these communities in and around the Meadowlands sort of weighed in with what their priorities were. And way back when, I was reminded yesterday, Kearney actually raised, apparently I wasn't there, that in exchange for a reasonable economic recompense that the landfill was something that they were willing to do. The fact of the matter is, there's no reason that's sufficient to justify the impact on quality of life and health risk that folks are living through. So the Department of Environmental Protection is now aggressively pursuing this at my direction. And again, this is to the Sports and Exposition Authority that I think has jurisdiction over that landfill. And we are trying to get to the right place. It turns out that simply filling it up, if that's the right way to put it, doesn't get the job done. That will not end, Linda, the odors that you're having to deal with. But what I do want to do is, our whole cabinet is listening, and I'm going to ask Catherine McCabe, our commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection, will get Linda's details, and I'm going to have her call you directly, Linda, to go through what steps we're taking and why the obvious ones, which looked obvious to me at least, are not the ones that are going to solve the riddle. So I appreciate your weighing in. Please bear with us, and she'll give you a shout.
Speaking of health issues, we've got this now, it's been in the news the last few days, this deadly fungus that is resistant to drug resistant. And of course, we've had the measles outbreak is ongoing, both in New Jersey, New York. And earlier in the past year, we had the deaths of children at the
Wanacue
Hospital. Is it reasonable for a person who doesn't know much about public health, I'll raise my hand here, to be concerned about what's going on, that things that didn't used to kill us are coming back?
Yeah.
And what you as governor, you know, what can be done about this, and particularly with this fungus?
You bet. So let me go through. And by the way, I'm not going to pass myself off as a health expert either. Our health commissioner, Dr. Sharif Al-Nahal, is listening in as well. So let's just go through these one at a time. The answer is, should people be more or less concerned? My gut tells me, with population growth and climate change and mobility, things are traveling around among populations a lot faster than they used to. Realities in parts of the world, including ours, are different, particularly, I would think, due to climate change and density of population and the ability to travel, than they were, say, 50 years ago. That doesn't mean that there aren't good common sense things that we all ought to be doing, and I'll come back to that in a second. But that also means that we have to be vigilant, and we are. And the Department of Health is monitoring all of the above. So on measles, there is a real outbreak in New York City. There is, I believe, 11 cases between Monmouth and Ocean County in New Jersey. We're watching it very closely. If you believe the press, and you can never tell here with complete certainty, that looks like it was due to travel that had started that initially. That's something we're watching very, very closely. The virus that you've referred to is a global phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Again, watching it very, very carefully. I know of no particular specific threat as we sit here tonight to anyone or any part of New Jersey, but that's something obviously we want to get out ahead of and not be dragged through. And the Wanacue tragedy was just as I said, it was an awful, awful tragedy for young adults and their families who have, by definition, fragile immune systems, particularly respiratory. They were felled by a virus, by the way, that can be extremely benign and found in almost every surface in our lives. But again, when you've got a compromised immune system, tragically, it took an awful toll. We were saying then and saying now that you basic segregating patient communities. Please, everyone, as my late mother would remind us, wash your hands constantly with soap and thoroughly. That prevents a lot of the sort of surface viruses that we're talking about. But there's no question the Wanacue thing was reality was an awful tragedy. And we have to learn from that, both at the state level as well as at the federal level.
And was there any role in terms of state oversight of that facility that you feel like the state fell off the job and is now back on?
Or? No, I don't think there's any evidence of that, but we take that, as you can imagine, very, very seriously, particularly when there's a loss of life and particularly with you've got a vulnerable population to begin with. As I said, these were folks, by definition, they wouldn't have been there if their immune systems weren't already compromised, if there were not fragile respiratory systems. And that's what this virus went right at. Do you live and learn? Do you try to figure out every single time out how you can do better? Absolutely.
Okay, let's go to another call. We have Greg in Bloomfield. Hi, Greg. You're on the air with the governor.
Hi, Governor. Thanks for taking our calls tonight.
My pleasure, Greg. How you doing?
Doing well, thank you. So I have a question about your plan to get the state carbon neutral by 2050. I think it's an admirable plan, and I applaud you for making it. But I've seen in the news that there's a number of fossil fuel projects that are going on in the state, a power plant in the Meadowlands, for example, a gas plant, and a number of other fossil fuel plants. So obviously we're not going to have power plants built to just be used for a couple decades. So I'm wondering if you'll commit tonight to put a halt on those plans, seeing as the New Jersey governorship is so powerful, and if you'll put a halt on other fossil fuel projects that are going on, permitting and construction, things like that.
Greg, here is the background, and I would, and I'm not patting myself on the back, by the way. I'm just sort of reading the facts. I don't know that there's a more progressive administration right now in America on the environment, period, and I'm including California. So I want to make sure everybody, and I understand the passions on both sides, and I get it. And by the way, my wife's on Al Gore's Climate Reality Project board, so this is including cuts close to home. I don't think there's a more progressive administration in any state right now in the United States of America. And I want to make sure that I say that, because people then have particular passions about Project X or Y, which I understand. But the fact of the matter is we have an explicit objective, which will, I'll be darned if we don't achieve, of a 100% clean energy economy by the mid-century. I spoke yesterday, the only American governor to speak to the IPF, which is the annual gathering in the United States of the offshore wind community. I'm the only governor in America. We have a 3,500 megawatt plan, 1,100 of which solicitation is out there, will be finalized by this June. We have enormous steps we're taking in solar and community solar. We have rejoined the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. I signed the Paris Accord the second I could. So people get it. Again, I'm not saying I don't understand people's concern about the Meadowlands power plant. The fact of the matter is the law is the law. And I may be powerful, but I want to say two things. The Department of Environmental Protection is required to go through a process that they are going through. And by calling balls and strikes on each one of these projects, you get a better outcome. Now, at the same time, I promised a master energy plan. Like a lot of other things, we used to be the planning state, and the last administration basically dropped the ball in, I think, every single plan. We now have a higher ed plan, which we unveiled a couple weeks ago. The master energy plan is being worked on as we speak. That will be the roadmap to get us to that 2050 goal of 100% clean energy. In the meantime, it's the law, it's the statute, it's my responsibility to call these balls and strikes as we see them, period.
You know, we've gotten tremendous number of questions, both sent to us via social and on the website, about environmental issues. So we'll have to come back to this, but quickly, single-use plastic is another thing that people are super upset about. They want to see you step in and put in a ban and restrict the use. And it's not just about grocery bags and straws, but people are talking about all kinds of plastic packaging.
You bet.
And that there really isn't a market for recyclables. And so they want to see action on that. What are you thinking about?
So the answer is I'm with them. Period. I'm sick of how many more whales are we going to read that ate 44 pounds of plastic in their stomach? It's a crisis. On that one, I need a bill. I need to work with the legislature. They've got to get something to me that I will sign. And I don't speak to specifics of legislation, but as a general conceptual matter, Nancy, you're pushing on a screen door with me. It's unacceptable. The United States ought to be. By the way, back to Greg's questions. America ought to be taking the high road here and leading the world, including on your very good question on plastics. But in the absence of that, as we are in a lot of other areas in the environment, New Jersey will take the lead.
We must get at least a dozen questions every month about pipelines.
Yep.
And now the Trump administration came out with something today,
I believe. Oh, my Lord. Yeah.
So they're saying that they're going to go around the state control and force pipelines through states. These are gas or oil pipelines. So What are you going to do about that?
So the sad news on pipelines is FERC, which is the federal authority, has a lot of power. And I saw what Trump did today. And, you know, that's why are we not surprised by that? We're going to continue to exercise our authority. And with all due respect to the feds, they have to respect our authority. And on each one of these, the one that really had got my goat in the campaign, which I think we talked about this maybe a couple of years ago, was the Penn East. But on all these, we take them one at a time. We do the we want to make sure that we are completely buttoned down, so nobody, regardless of where our decision comes out, nobody can ever come back at us and say you cut corner X, you cut corner Y, you should have done Z and you didn't. I want to make sure that we're completely buttoned down on all these.
Okay, we're going to talk more about the environment and congestion pricing coming up. I'm Nancy Solomon, and you're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
Listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're coming to you live from the studios of WBGO in Newark with New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. And let's go to more questions that are coming in on social media. Doug Doyle, what do you have for us?
Nancy, we both have Carolyn from Highland Park and Dana from South Jersey basically asking Governor Murphy the same question. Will New Jersey driver's licenses be real ID compliant soon? And Dana says, if my license is up this year before it's compliant, I don't think I should have to pay to get another one just a few months to be compliant.
Was it Carolyn from Highland Park, Doug?
Dana and Carolyn both
okay.
had the same question.
Dana was in South Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Both good questions. We just had a meeting with the Motor Vehicles Commission, Commissioner Sue Fulton yesterday. Sue's listening. I'm going to have her follow up with both Carolyn and Dana. We're working really hard on Real ID. We're trying to learn from other states that have not executed that brilliantly. I love the preparation we're going through. There's real aggressive leadership at the MVC, which I'm really impressed by. Obviously, the devil will be in the execution, but the rollout is expected for this fall. I believe October, if my memory serves me correctly. I don't know about your answer to the question about paying twice. I can't believe we're going to make you do that, but I defer to Sue, and I'll make sure that she follows up with each one of you.
Okay, let's take another call. We have Perry in Rutherford with a question, I believe, about New Jersey Transit. Perry.
Good evening, Governor.
Hey, Perry, how are you?
Very good. I know that you're committed to rebuilding New Jersey Transit. I'm a commuter. I take a train from Rutherford to Hoboken and a bus to Jersey City. So I use New Jersey Transit. And I know there's a class of engineers in the pipeline and employees that are needed for New Jersey Transit. In the interim, what other kinds of things are you doing to beef up New Jersey Transit and make it a national model, which was neglected for so many years?
Perry, thank you. By the way, the Rutherford train station has a soft place in my heart because the Monday before every election day that I've either campaigned in or run in, I go to the Rutherford train station. So, Perry, I hope to see you there on Monday, June 3rd, or I suspect I'll be back. So, listen, there's largely good news, but folks have to remember a couple of things. One is, of all the messes we inherited from the last guys, this was the biggest. So they had cut their funding by up to 90% at one point. They put a bunch of leadership in that didn't have any transit expertise. They were way, 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 way behind in federal safety requirements. And as Perry points out, they had let their engineering class, the folks who run the trains, they furloughed them, they skipped them. They allowed that degree of freedom to get so thin that we're digging out of that, all of the above. My budget this year, good news. Last year, put a ton of money in. This year, $407.5 million direct from the state. If we get that investment, no another year of no fare increases. We have outstanding management. We met, this is a huge deal, we met a federally mandated safety guideline by December 31st of last year that nobody thought we could meet. Perry, we not only have an engineering class, we don't have one, two, three, four, five. We have six classes right now, four of which will graduate in 2019. All of that comes at a price. It takes a long time. The investments have to take hold. Dealing with that safety requirement last year meant we weren't able to deal with other things. We are slowly, steadily, but surely getting back on our feet. It will take time. My gut tells me this summer will be another challenging one. Again, the engineering class won't yet be fully built out. And folks, in the summer, good weather, kids are off from school, you got a lot of vacations. That's going to impact our ability, our degrees of freedom. You have a night like we had Sunday night, unacceptable as it relates to the folks trying to get home from WrestleMania, period, full stop, unacceptable. But that's not the story at NJ Transit right now. That was a bad night. We should have anticipated that. They didn't, and I'm not happy about that. But the overarching story of NJ Transit is slow, steady, headed in the right direction.
Now, Chris Christie has taken the opportunity to jump on you about the WrestleMania, which is a bit rich given that he had his Super Bowl problem there.
I did. Had he performed Sunday night? I didn't see this.
No, he was not there.
But he
criticized you for that. I mean, what was the problem exactly? NJ Transit didn't know it was going to get let out so late?
I have to say this. I said this the other day. If Chris Christie is upset with us, that tells me we're doing good work and we're doing the right things. And with all due respect to the governor, he has no leg to stand on NJ Transit. He put a bunch of cronies in to run it. He cut the funding by 90%. He furloughed engineers. He was 11% of meeting the federal safety deadline, and he had 7 years to get to 100. We got 89% in 10 months. So with all due respect, Governor, what happened? At one level, the wrestling went late, later than they had said it would go. And so you had several crews, again, very few degrees of freedom, that timed out, just like pilots on United Airlines. They can't go beyond a certain amount of time. That's largely a safety and workplace reality, and that's as it should be. We should have anticipated that. WrestleManias, I'm told, usually go late. Where were the bullhorns on the platforms? Where were the dozen, 20, 30 people on the platform saying, folks, this is what's going on, even if the reality wasn't better? Where were the buses? You know, we could have had 50, but we own buses. We could have had buses lined up as an insurance policy. Would all of that cost us a little bit more money? Yeah, but I want to get WrestleMania back. I want to get the Super Bowl back. I want to get the big events back to New Jersey where folks say, you know what, you can reliably count on mass transportation. And for all the above, it was a bad and unacceptable night.
We're getting more questions about NJ Transit. Doug Doyle has gotten some on social. Doug, you have somebody from Hillsborough, I think.
We do have people from Hillsborough, but this one I'm going to talk to the governor about is Jennifer from Bloomfield, who says, New Jersey Transit is in crisis, Governor. Every time I ride it, I wonder if I'll get to my destination on time and in one piece. The MTA, she says, is also in crisis, and PATH is way over capacity. Have you considered approaching the governors of New York and Connecticut to explore combining NJ Transit with MTA and PATH so that these problems may be comprehensively addressed?
Jennifer, I haven't done that, although I speak to those governors all the time and our team speak all the time. I think I've read that it's going to take $35 billion to fix the MTA. So with all due respect, I'm good staying away from that. Let them work that out. I wish them well on that. I'd love to know what your commute is. I'd love to know whether you ride the bus or take the rail. I'm going to ask either Diane Scicchetti, who's our Commissioner of Department of Transportation or Kevin Corbett, who's the Executive Director of NJ Transit, to get a specific sense of your commute. I take the train about once or so a week. I want to make sure I see it with my own eyes. Again, this is the bread and butter day in and day out service. I'm not talking about WrestleMania. I'm talking about getting to work and getting home on time. And the trend is in the right direction. It's just going to take more time than we all would want. As it relates to PATH, which we do have co-control over through the Port Authority with New York, the crowding, the overcrowding is something we hear about a lot, and we are in their capital plan trying to inject some capital into that to make sure that that we can address that overcrowding. I'm optimistic. I really am, particularly in NJ Transit, which we can control completely. What I'm not optimistic on at the moment is the Trump administration has to help us build the tunnel under the Hudson. I just read some testimony from Secretary Chao today, which is completely, completely, utterly inaccurate and not true about New Jersey not putting up its own share of this. That's completely and utterly false. We have been
we've heard that before, haven't
it's
we?
It's just so frustrating, and it's completely untrue. And so you got to wonder when people say something like that, that's so untrue time and again. And I'm in here every single day putting as much skin in the game as humanly possible. Everybody acknowledges, including from New York, that New Jersey's leading the class in terms of putting their money where their mouth is. To see someone like that consistently not tell the truth about our commitment really riles me up and makes me very unhappy.
I saw a news piece about the fact that the Federal Department of Transportation was blocking the environmental impact report from going forward and getting being conducted and done, which is something that has to get done to keep moving the steps forward.
To say we haven't had the constructive partnership, which, by the way, has historically been the case, both sides of the aisle, administrations in both parties, to say that we have not had the spirit of cooperation would be the understatement of the year. I give a lot of shout-outs to Amtrak, to the Gateway Development Corp, which is overseen jointly by New York and New Jersey, to Governor Cuomo and his team, to the congressional delegations on both sides of the aisle, both sides of the Hudson. Nancy, folks know this, and Jennifer lives it every day, 20% of the nation's economy, not New Jersey's, the nation's economy depends on this Northeast rail link. Mm-hmm. It's overwhelmingly compelling, and I'm going to keep fighting day in and day out until we get this done.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy, and we will be taking both social media questions and your calls. So another transit-related issue that's been in the news is the possibility that New York City is going to enact what's called congestion pricing. So this is the idea that for a certain part of New York, you know, I haven't paid enough attention to, is it below 96th Street that you pay a toll to drive?
It's below the George Washington Bridge, which
Really?
All I'm looking at.
So people in New Jersey are upset about this because it already costs a lot of money to drive to Manhattan, paying a hefty toll at the bridges and the tunnels. I think it's from $10.50 up to $15, depending on what time of day and whether you have Easy Pass. Is there a better, clearly we want to see less cars on the streets in New York, but is there a better way to go about this?
Yeah, listen, I have conceptual sympathy. And by the way, in many respects, as New York goes, particularly in the northern part of our state, New Jersey goes. And so we're always in competition, but we're also always in cooperation. On this one, let me say explicitly, I'm the governor of New Jersey. I represent the 9 million New Jersey residents. I represent the commuters who go in and out of New York every day. This, at least at the level that it's been discussed, would include both the Lincoln and Holland tunnels. So there would not be a so-called double taxation. If you paid the fare to come across the Hudson, that's going to count and you won't have to pay it again because both of those tunnels empty into the zone. At least in the first iteration, the George Washington Bridge is not included, and that can't stand. So if it were to stand, what would happen? Number one, somebody who keeps taking the George Washington Bridge got to pay twice. I can't allow that to happen. Or if they decide not to pay twice, maybe they'll drive down and take the Lincoln and the Holland Tunnel. I don't know, particularly with the construction in and around the on-ramp and, 440 into the Lincoln Tunnel. The last thing we need right now are more cars either going into those tunnels on the Jersey side or coming out on the New York side, or right. vice versa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the third alternative, Nancy, is that they'll take a bus or a train. Again, systems that we are desperately, given what we inherited, working on getting back on their feet. The last thing we need is another shock to the system of that kind of. So we will. We can, for all those reasons, we can't let this stand.
Well, and the current plan, as it stands, doesn't put any money towards New Jersey Transit. It just puts it towards the MTA and the PATH.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it's the PATH. It puts it toward the MTA, Metro North, and the LIE, I believe. And so that's another fair point. Where's the money going? But the big, big one for me, and the one we've got to crack the back of, is the double taxation on the George Washington Bridge.
So what have your conversations with Governor Cuomo been like?
We have not directly spoken. We're setting up a call. I sent him a letter. I've spoken to some of his senior advisors who I happen to know over the years. Our teams have spoken. We have been very clear about this. There's been a general sense of goodwill. Let's try to figure this out together. But this is too important to not relent. We will stay in this one until we get it right.
Okay, we're going to take another call from another question from social media. Doug Doyle, what do you have for us?
Well, the governor has addressed some of this already, but Richard from Bloomfield is upset. He says, you know, when it comes to congestion pricing and NJ Transit not getting the revenue, why aren't you planning to implement congestion pricing in Jersey City, Hoboken, Weehawken, Fort Lee, and other communities? He also wants to know, asking Governor Cuomo to share some of the revenue won't work. Go to the table to negotiate with him with NJ's own congestion pricing plan, and then maybe he'll be willing to negotiate.
Yeah, listen, Richard, those are all fair points. I would hope that we can get something that is not a race to the bottom and just a tit-for-tat reality, particularly given how well we work with New York. And I have to say that across a whole variety of interests. The Gateway Tunnel project, which, by the way, is a family of projects totaling close to $30 billion, is a good example of that. The Port Authority. We work together on gun safety. There's a lot we do constructively together. It's probably the closest partnership that we have as a state. I want to make sure people understand that. Getting into an arms race with New York is not really of anyone's interest. But having said that, Richard, I'm standing strong on this, and I have to stand strong. My hope would be that we can find a particular accommodation, certainly for the George Washington Bridge and perhaps for the revenue application, but importantly for the George Washington Bridge.
Well, and after all, a lot of New Yorkers do pay New Jersey Turnpike and Garden State Parkway tolls, so there is that.
We accept that money happily. We're a state that people love to come to, that transit through. We're the densest state in the nation. We have a lot going on. Our doors are wide open.
All right, let's take another call. Jennifer from Merchantville, you're on the air with the governor.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call, Governor Murphy.
Hi, Jennifer.
My question is, when will you fulfill your promise to close Jamesburg and Hayes, our two youth prisons in New Jersey?
I had an exchange today with one of the co-chairs of the Juvenile Justice Task Force. It is something that we are very focused on. We are not there yet. Our hope was that we would allow this task force to complete its work so that we are not making a one-off, little bit like my energy answer earlier. I'd prefer to have an understanding of a construct of where we're headed on juvenile justice, and then fit the pieces into that. The track record, particularly of young persons of color in our state, is dire historically. And you see it in many respects in schools, where a person of color immediately gets disciplined in an ugly way versus someone who gets a slap on the wrist. So to be continued. Jennifer, I'm going to have one of members of our cabinet to follow up with you, Marcus Hicks, who's the commissioner of we'll follow up with you.
Okay, thank you, Governor. We'll have to leave it there. You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. The show is produced by Katie Colinari with help from Doug Doyle, Alexandra Hill, Joseph Capriglione and Rebecca Ibarra. Our executive producer is Amy Niles. Our engineer is Corey David Tallickson. And I'm Nancy Solomon. Thanks for listening. This is Ask Governor Murphy.